Welcome back, everybody, to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery, reporting from Madden's on Gold Lake, from AIGA Minnesota's wonderful design campus. And I have with me Val. Val, is it Val Head?
Yes. Yeah.
I want to make sure, you know, I never know. It's spelled that way, but I want to make sure that it's pronounced that way.
Yeah, I have a really obvious name. It's good, but it's tricky because everyone expects it to be more complicated.
It's almost too obvious.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem.
It's like a little too short. Everyone's like, that can't be it. I'm like, nope, yeah. That's it.
And so your domain name is just valhead.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun because I think we talked briefly earlier that every time I go to AIGA events for years, mm-hmm. It's always like, why is there not more tech people? Why is there not more tech people? And they actually brought in somebody that CSS, animation, mm-hmm. HTML5 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
What brought you into the design world from the tech world, or what brought you from the tech world to the design world?
Well, I mean, I've always been a designer, and I just kind of got into web things years ago, and it just always seemed like when I first started, the people that taught me, they just assumed that everyone who did design also knew how to code things. And I think that's changed over the years, and maybe I just got kind of lucky or just ran into the few people that considered that to be the norm back in the day. So I've always done a little bit of coding, and you know, it's just something that's really come in handy through the years. And I've been able to do some really interesting projects because I can do code that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. And, I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the secret out there is that that's also how I have been able to maintain a living.
Yeah, yeah.
Since I've graduated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a job where the code was as important as the design.
Yeah.
And then once you can do that, you get hired for that.
Yeah, exactly. So. And, I mean, sometimes, I know it's always a tough question of like, should designers know how to code? How far do you go? I mean, it's a tricky.
And we're talking
area.
More front end development.
Oh,
code.
Yeah.
We're not talking like database stuff.
No,
so,
no.
Yeah.
That you don't want me doing your database.
Likewise.
I'm like, maybe I'll be able to get something out of it, but I don't think I can make you one.
I have learned how to do full exports from MySQL and how to do full imports. You know, but
I don't think I even know that much.
If you can do what I've seen in your presentation, I could teach you and you would understand it in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's really so that when you move development WordPress sites and stuff, I can move the full database much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So
makes sense, yeah. But it's all front end stuff, which I guess is maybe to like serious programmer people not considered all that much.
Right, but to everyone at one of these design conferences, that's really all we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's the fun stuff.
I think part of the thing people they're like, do I want to learn how to code? And they realize, like design, there's different types of design. Well, there's different types of code, and learning markup code, which is kind of what we do, is not programming code.
Nope.
And it's not as scary as you think.
No, I mean, markup is really just kind of like describing things, right? It's just saying this is like a heading or this is whatever. And you basically just label it. And then based on what you label it, it's what it is. And then like a CSS, it gets a little bit beyond that, considering you can do like animation and change colors and everything.
Oh, but and that's the other thing is you don't have to know all of it to be able to do things. Like every project we learned a little bit more.
Yeah.
And eventually we learn. Like we started, I think, just 3-4 months ago, I did a website where it had some fade-in using CSS and stuff.
Just doing some transitions and
stuff. Because it made sense.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times it doesn't make sense. And I was like, but I learned it for that. And now I'm like, well, if it makes sense, I'll use it again.
Yeah. It's like one more thing. It's like no one knows it all from the get-go.
The thing I've found out of everyone, because I used to teach a little night classes on web design too and stuff, is that the people that pick it up the best are the people that organize their files, because all web stuff is based on relative files.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you open up your window and you're viewing everything by icon instead of file name, web's going to be hard for you.
Yeah, like organization is important.
Organization. And the other one is you just have to be okay with viewing the page, realizing it's broke, fixing it, realizing it's broke, fixing it. Like, you just got to be okay with failing a lot.
Yeah, there's generally no one right way to do stuff. Like, even if there's not actually a mistake or an error, it's just like, you might do it this way, and it gets done, and you get what you need done accomplished, but that doesn't mean that, like, someone else could do it a completely different way and get the same results. And it doesn't mean that either of you are wrong.
It also doesn't mean that, you know, when you're working on projects late, and you spend up, it ends up you spend hours, and you're like, there's a missing semicolon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those errors are annoying when you're like, oh, I had a typo. Like, why isn't this working? Oh, because I spelled it broader instead of border. And
oh, this server is cap sensitive.
Yeah, those are the frustrating moments. And it happens, like, no matter how much you've done it and no matter how good you are at it, you still make those mistakes, right? Like, you're like, oh, it was a typo.
Yeah, I found, I think I was working on this project this month. I've been working on this project that doubled in size and stuff somewhere in there. And so it was way more late nights tonight than I'm liking. And I think a few nights I got to that point where I'm like, okay, I know that this should take half an hour or an hour, but I also know based on how I'm coding right now,
yeah,
if I do it tonight, it'll take 3 hours, and there's a 50% shot that everything I do will mess up things worse. And I'm like, I'm going home, I'll do it in the morning.
Yeah.
Because, and sure enough, wake up and your brain's fresh, and you're like, okay, half an hour. But yeah. I'm like, yeah, I would have stayed way too late, and I would have broken things that were working before I started.
Yeah, there's always that case where, like, if you're really banging your head against something late at night, and you're like, I just can't figure out the problem at all, this is unsolvable. And then you get back to it in the morning, and you're like, oh, it was this, and you fix it in, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah. Or you wake up in the middle of the night, and you're like, I know how to do it.
Yes.
I'll go back to bed, and I hope I remember.
Those are both really, like, good moments, but also very frustrating. You're like, I'm glad I figured it out, but couldn't I have done it hours ago?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like design is like that a lot, too, where you're just, like, even just trying to solve visual problems, you're like, I can't figure out how to make this make sense, or this content, or make them show that they're related, or whatever else. And then, like, the same idea. You could, like, not have any idea, and then you, like, change the color of a heading, and you're like, that was it. That was all I had to do.
And I think those are issues where, like you fail just as much in design. It just happens that you've been doing it longer.
You feel safer.
You forgot how many times you messed up that Photoshop file before you figured out how to make Photoshop files.
Yeah. Or how many times you, like, I don't know, how many versions you went through before you got the one that you actually, like, were happy with or that worked. Yeah. You get so used to it and working that way because it's just regular and normal. You kind of miss those little bits, like, oh, wait. I do make these kind of, like, that's how I worked before, and it's just because it's a new subject matter doesn't mean I'm, like, terrible at it. It's just the process of learning.
Yeah, and I mean it's fascinating, but I would recommend that if you're a younger student, learning code is not a bad deal.
No, definitely not.
And
I think it's
pretty fun. Doesn't mean, and you don't even have to learn a lot of code, but if you even know some code. Mm-hmm. Then if you work at a place with programmers, then you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't send them this because this little thing will destroy them, and it really makes no difference to the design.
Yeah, it really helps. I mean, knowing even just a little bit of it helps so much, and just having that common ground of, like, you don't have to be able to do their job, but you understand how it gets done, and it's not like a big crazy mystery, so you can actually talk to them about it in a meaningful way. That's huge, really. I mean, that's bigger than knowing how to do it yourself.
Yeah, and then you can tell them, you're like, hey, look, I know this is a giant thing to code wrong. I know it's going to take you a lot of hours, but we want it like that.
Yeah.
For a reason.
As opposed to just being like, what do you mean? I just figured it was all easy.
Yeah. You know? Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, not my job.
All right, we'll be right back with Valhead. So now I've just started doing, I did some, like, ease ins and fades in style sheets. So where does somebody go? Let's say they know, okay, first off, if they know no code, where do you recommend they go to kind of pick up something?
To start learning some code for, like, animation and stuff?
No, just, well, if they, like, know no code, we're going to talk about animation next.
Well, there's some pretty good online schools for all of this. I mean, I liked combining the idea of, like, online courses and in-person meetups. There's a lot of places, like, I'm a co-leader of the Girl Develop It chapter in Pittsburgh. There's a lot of little, like, kind of meetups like that where you probably couldn't, depending on how the size of the chapter or what's near you, they may have enough classes to, like, get you started full out, but usually you probably want to go to a couple meetups and then learn some more online. And there's some great places, like, Melinda.com has a bunch. And there's things like Code School.
And someone was even saying, like, if you have an Omaha Public Library card, you can take Linda's hooked up with it.
Oh, there are some, there are some libraries and a lot of schools like that, too. They have, like, a group account or something.
So check with your public library, check with your university or whatever. they may have a way for you to view Lynda classes for free.
Yeah, even your employer might actually. If you work for some bigger companies, they just have like an all employees Lynda access.
Yeah, the shop next door to us. They have one.
It's good, and then I think Code School is free, and there's a few other online.
Certain
like
Code
that.
School is free for like the intro ones.
Oh, okay, certain classes, yeah.
And then they might charge because I had to learn something real quick and I was like, oh, I've heard of Code School. So I went there and I saw the intro class and whatever, and then I'm like, great, and I'm ready to do the second one, and it's like, I gotta pay now. Yeah. But at least it was
They're not too expensive though, are they?
I don't think it was, but actually the intro one was really helpful. So I was like, I can take it from here.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, it's probably the paid for courses are probably going to be better content than the super all free stuff. Like all of this, generally everything that you get in these classes, if you search enough on Google and read enough blog posts, you probably could cobble it all together.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Code School and the Lynda, the nice thing is they're written in a way or created in a way where for a designer and you can follow it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can Google search, which I've had to do and I'm sure you have too, how to do code. And if you're not a real programmer, you may have to go to like your fifth or sixth result before you see one where you're like, okay, I understand this.
Yeah.
But I've also had ones where I could never find that, so I talked to my friend who's a programmer. It's like, does this make sense to you? And I was like, oh yeah, this is easy. And I'm like, okay.
But there's also like the big questions are usually like why you would do something and then like what to learn next, right? And I feel like the courses and having that structure of either courses or meetups helps you with that, because you can, you know, the instructor will maybe tell you why, or you can ask the person in the meetup why. Like why you would do it a certain way versus another way, or, you know, just all the reasoning behind it. That's, I feel like, the harder part. You can find a code snippet for anything, but knowing what to look for or what might solve your problem, that's the harder stuff to know.
And I also think there's a networking thing where if you start to meet other people who do it, none of us know everything.
Oh, exactly.
And so to be able to have somebody we can say, like, hey, let me get back to you. I got a few people like that. I've also had that where people say, can we do this on the website? And it's like, let me get back to you. I got a few people I'm going to have to talk to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And maybe it'll work. And if not, we'll look for a different solution.
Yeah, yeah. There's always some solution. It's usually a matter of like, do you want to go through that trouble? Is it actually worth it?
Right.
But yeah, there's pretty much nothing is impossible. It's just the matter of effort and just like time or, you know, I don't know, willingness.
Yeah, we were doing a website. A student group was coding it. And the committee was like, hey, can we do the search to be functioned this way? And he goes, look, anything's possible, but we are not Google.
Like, your student group isn't going to reinvent Google search.
Yeah.
And, why
and then,
not?
And then they're like, oh. And then they said, well, like, this is what we think will work. Mm-hmm. We think this will, you know, handle the needs, and we can implement this. And they're like, yeah, actually, that'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's what people are asking for, especially when it comes to clients, when they're asking for something crazy and huge. It's maybe not because that's exactly what they want, but it's the only thing they can identify. And if you can have a conversation and work out like what is both possible and solves the problem in maybe a less crazy way.
Yeah, so if somebody comes up and they say, hey, we want a flash site because we hear they're awesome and we like all that motion. Like right now, what you're doing is with CSS is you can provide some of that function. In everything I've seen with HTML5 and CSS, doesn't do as much as Flash did, but it does probably as much or more than the client will ever really want it to do.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird drop-off, right? Like, Flash was dead or whatever. Kind of before any of this HTML5 stuff, CSS, I guess that's a good umbrella for it, the HTML5 or web animation stuff was really ready. Like, it was super close. But the nice thing is that with the way browsers are updating and changing so fast now, that it's changed so much even the last couple years. Even next year, so much more will be possible and supported than is now, even like a couple months from now. It's getting a little crazy just how fast this stuff gets implemented. I mean, it used to be you'd read about some new CSS feature and you'd have to wait like 3 years to use it. And now it's like you might have to wait a couple months and you could probably use it maybe a year if you have to support older browsers or it's more complicated, which is takes some getting used to. Like, to have that much change that fast.
Right.
It's good, but it's also like, oh my god, what?
Yeah, because I would say a few years ago, it's like we want to say we're cutting edge, but it does no good. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, we still have to. You still want to support back two browsers, and I think that's normally the isn't that normally the status quo is two versions back or whatever.
Yeah,
is it becoming less so because computers and phones auto upgrade, or is it becoming less so because clients don't care?
I think it's a lot the auto-updating. It's like now if you have Chrome or Firefox, even IE is auto-updating. It's, well, they call it evergreen browsers is what they call it, the browser people anyways. It's like it always updates itself, so you always have the newest one. And then it just be, I mean, it becomes easier for them security wise too. It's not just to make our jobs easier, but like if there's a security patch, you know, back in the day when people had to download a new browser, it's like, oh, there's still people with this crazy exploit because they couldn't update it or didn't bother. So that evergreenness really helps. And I think it's also that the web is just being taken more seriously. You know, people realize that it's not just like, oh, you have this pretty picture on the web that represents your business. It's like people are getting things done. They're like effectively, there's software that exists only on the web and we're accomplishing like complex real tasks. I think that's part of it too. It's like, they're like, okay, this browser stuff is serious business. We should maybe update it more.
Right, right. No, and so you mentioned in your talk that it's not always, and we talk about animation, mm-hmm. and I think it was very much true where you said it's not the quantity of the animation, it's the quality of the animation.
Yeah.
Because you showed one of the, what's becoming a very standard Ajax scrolling website.
Yeah, like kind of like scroll
jacking. You scroll down and everything like flies in everywhere.
Yeah, that was maybe an exaggerated example of it too. They're not all that bad.
No, but there is something where those sites are great to look through the first time, mm-hmm. but if you actually have a content website,
yeah,
it may not be the best thing.
And sometimes they're not even fun to look through the first time. But yeah, I mean, that's similar to wanting a Flash site, right? It's like, this is trendy. That parallax stuff is trendy. We want it. It's like, why? What in your content supports that, like, that concept of parallax? Like, just having things move at different speeds isn't appropriate for everything. You know, the very first parallax site, the Nike Better World one, they use it as part of their storytelling. There's been a couple sites I've seen that use it really well. Big Spaceship did a site of water a while ago, rather, for a water product, and they had like all these parallax bubbles and stuff, which like it was for water. It was like for fancy bubbly water. It made, you know, there was some connection there. But then you see some that are for like a real estate agent, and you're like, why? Why is this happening? Like, this is, you just did it because you think it looks cool.
Right, you can scroll down and you can see the house being built. And you can scroll up and you can see the house being demolished.
And you're like, that's maybe not a good use of your time. I don't know. But I think there's always going to be that, though, right? There's always going to be people that just want something that they think looks cool and don't care if it's unrelated to the content or if it makes it hard to read or impossible to use.
But I think that's part of it as a designer. Like, we need to realize that just because we can do something mm-hmm. or just because the client asked for it doesn't mean that's actually the right solution.
Yeah.
So, like, even back in the day, I did very little Flash. Mm-hmm. And so clients would always call and they said, do you do Flash? And I'd be like, what are you talking about?
What exactly do you mean?
Because if you want a full Flash website, I'm thinking with, like, video game interactivity, which it could do, mm-hmm. it's like, I'm not going to be a great fit.
Yeah.
But then you start talking and really they just wanted like a little slideshow on the homepage. Yeah. They wanted something with motion. It's like,
or like buttons with fancy hovers or something.
Yeah. And then it was like, okay, this is a different thing. Like that stuff now we can talk about.
But. Yeah. I mean, but it's also, it's not the client's jobs to be able to identify this stuff correctly. You know, like that's what we know. We're experts in that. So, but it is sometimes tough to have those initial conversations. You're like, oh wow, that is, what you said is not at all what you meant.
Right.
But also good. You're like, good that it's not what you really wanted, but wow, oops.
All right, we're going to take one final break, and we'll be right back with Valhead at valhead.com. So this is your first year at camp.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. And camp has done a great job of bringing in a wide variety of speakers. Somebody, they kind of mentioned, like you know, they bring in kind of a tech designer of sorts and yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in an educator, illustrator. They bring in an in-house guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then and you know, business people. And then the breakout sessions really kind of go all over the place, too.
Yeah, they do.
It's very much this is a true generalized mm-hmm. design overview conference, which is wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. I've been impressed by just how just how expansive the programming is and how much variety there is, really. Plus, everyone's just super nice, so that's helpful.
Yeah, and yesterday everyone was in plaid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yesterday was plaid day.
Yeah, I missed the note about platter day. Oh well.
Yeah, I got it, but I don't have any plaid.
Oh no. Oh well. But no, it's been great. Like even the networking dinner and everything was super fun, just to talk to a bunch of different people.
And there is something about them just, like, being locked up here.
in a resort
near Brainerd. Like, nobody's, like, leaving because you're stuck on... So when you go on afterwards, it's like there's only like two places you can go.
Yeah,
you're gonna run into a large contingent of the conference.
Yeah,
it's not in the middle of a city where everyone disperses, which also can be fun.
Yeah, it's a different take, and everyone's got the same design camp sweatshirts on, so that's kind of fun.
And it's the one conference where you wear the item that they give you in the gift bag immediately because you're like, it is a little cold.
It was great for the campfire last night. I was very glad we got a hoodie.
So if you have nothing to wear and you're afraid you're going to look odd, they will actually dress you at this conference even.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you said that you've got a book coming out in the year?
I do, yeah, coming out next year. I'm writing a book called Designing Interface Animation. So a lot of the
Shouldn't
same...
that just be a Parallax Animator website? Or just one page? It should be a long... Yeah. The whole book should be one long parallax scrolling site.
It's actually like a one-page book just says, do parallax. No, but a lot of the stuff I was talking about in my talk this morning of just like what design problems animation can help us solve, how to do it well, how to make it look good and be nice to use. I've been teaching a lot of workshops on this and doing talks on this the last like couple years, and I just really wanted to get one place.
What is the advantage of, other than it looks cool and it's awesome, that you can tell a client where when you said, hey, I want to do some animations on this, how can I tell a client that that's beneficial?
I don't usually say it right out at the beginning of projects, so people tend to come to me now because I do animation stuff. But it kind of depends on the interactions and the content and fitting it in really similar way that you do with like type and hierarchy and everything. You wouldn't tell a client like this website's going to be blue until you actually looked at stuff. So a lot of it's going through, if you start at the very beginning of the process and you're doing like user flows or wireframing, looking at the tasks people are trying to accomplish, and then, animation could be helpful for some of those. If it's like a very complex step-by-step task, maybe using animation to help guide them through it. It often comes in handy for feedback. If there's just like, throughout the process, there's these little like feedback loops you can complete to show people, the action they took really did happen. It really did result in the results they wanted. If they're reordering things or submitting a form, that kind of stuff. It's also really good for directing attention. If there are things, we're all pretty bad at paying attention to what we're doing online and we're distracted.
Right. So 18 browsers.
Yeah.
Open.
So maybe, you did a thing and you're not sure if it really happened or if you really submitted something or like you didn't realize that the content on your screen changed, and you can have some motion to help with that too. So it's really good for that. And kind of the biggest thing I think people use it for.
So you're talking like motion, not like when they're scrolling and stuff, but like they hit a button.
Yeah.
Things move in order to draw attention to an item on the page.
Yeah, like something that's more like a conversation between the interface you're building and the person using it. Like you're helping them accomplish something and know that what the actions they took did result in something versus just, I hit a button, now what?
Right.
Or great parallax. But and a lot of it helps for orientation too, especially when we're dealing with phones and mobile and smaller screens. We tend to hide a lot of stuff out of view, and using transitions and animating the entrances and exits of all those different parts can help people better understand where things are when they can't see them. We almost have to create these like spatial maps of the sites we're using, and maybe we don't actually think about them really specifically, but we kind of do as we're using these interfaces, and not everything we can do is visible on screen. So there's a lot I can help with all of those things.
Where do you think this is going? Is it going to become easier to code like as this goes on, or are there going to be more options where it'll be more confusing? Is there going to be some sort of standardizing, do you think?
Yeah, for web, right now we've got a lot of options. We've got CSS, we've got JavaScript libraries and SVG, and there is a movement to kind of consolidate these all under one umbrella. The name's a little confusing. It's called the Web Animation API, which I'm like, oh, guys, what a terrible name, because I refer to animation on the web as like web animation because it is, but there's also...
The minute you put API in it, half your people just tune out.
What it basically is a way, it's like an umbrella term, so that way you will be able to, animate CSS and SVG and JavaScript all together in one place instead of having to go to three different things.
How are they going to bring emojis into this?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay, because now they got the taco emoji. It needs to be involved.
Yeah. But there's definitely some consolidating and improving, and just like it's getting a lot more attention as people use it more. So browser vendors and the people that make all these standards are improving them and putting time into making them better, which is only good for us in the end.
Okay, and what sites do you follow any sites to keep up on these trends, or do you just kind of just Google everything, or do you just make it up, or in this case, wait a year for a book to come out, which is going to be amazing.
Well, I think I get a lot of stuff on Twitter. So, I mean, CSS Tricks is always a good place for all things CSS. Chris does a great job with that site and everyone else who contributes to it. CodePen is another good one for seeing just these kind of like neat little demos that people make. They might make some little example files.
Nothing's better than having demos.
Yeah. Some people even put out some like full tutorials on it. It's great. Those are both some two good sites to get an idea of what you can do and just get a little peek at how it's done too.
No, I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time, Val. It's great
no
to see you.
No problem. Yeah, it's great to chat with you.
And I have to thank Nina Paper for sending me out here to blog for ninapaperblog.com. You can follow my updates that happened months ago from there. Thank you much. The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.